Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
For the second week in a row, we get to talk about a Bengals win on the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. I can't believe it, John Sharon. It's a win streak. It's a road win. Oh my gosh. Multiple monkeys off of Zach Taylor's back. How you doing, buddy? Happy holidays.
A close win too. Yeah. I think it's the first time they've won in Houston, like maybe ever?
It's been a long time. Yeah.
Because like they've only been around since 2002, and they definitely lost a couple times in January about 8 years ago. So a lot of monkeys off a lot of backs.
Incredible. Yeah. Yeah. We were talking a little bit beforehand, but you had a good Christmas and hung a little bit with the immediate fam there. Have a good holiday and everything.
Yeah. It was definitely fun because I went home and that was before the Texans game. And as many of you guys know, you know, my mom and my sister are big Steelers fans. So I got to talk a little smack, you know. It's been a long while since I've been able to do that. So
yeah. Get any good any Bengals gifts or anything for Christmas?
Nah, I got plenty of that. I didn't need any more.
Okay. All right. Well, good to be with you as always, my friend. And we get to bring in the new year, at least talking about a win. Hopefully the Bengals can get one more. We're gonna be talking about the season finale against the Baltimore Ravens. Can the Bengals string together three wins, knock out a division foe, and really put a nice ribbon on the 2020 season that really was overall disappointing? So let's talk a little bit about the Houston game before we get to a stat of the week, before we get to previewing the Ravens game, and then we're going to do a little bit of Bengals New Year's resolutions at the end of the program before we get on out of here. But John, I guess we can just kind of say overall impressions of this game. What do you make of those stigmas, I guess, or those hurdles that Zach Taylor has had yet to clear in almost two full seasons? I mean, is this telling you a bit more? Do these two wins tell you a bit more about Zach Taylor and potential progress, or do we still know what we know based on the previous almost two seasons before these two games?
Our good friend Mike Holbrook in Facebook saying, "I hope you guys aren't drinking the Kool-Aid." And yeah, I think that's fair. You know, the Kool-Aid is there. It's definitely bright orange. It's got a nice little ladle in it. There's cups next to it. I'm not quite taking a sip yet, though. You know, I think it was at the end of the day, a win is a win, and it was an impressive offense performance. It was impressive that they were able to win on the road in a close game for the first time in what seems like forever. Like, you can't really take that away from them. But also, you know, you can't forget the first 14 weeks of this. You know, it's impressive, but we still do kind of know what we know. And it's just like, I mean, at this point, obviously Zach's coming back and these wins give you a little bit more confidence about seeing, you know, maybe there is something brewing here. And if that is the case, then obviously it's great. But also I think there are some things here that make it seem a little bit more than just a dead cat bounce. And this is something that we've seen obviously many times in the last 20 or so years. And apparently oftentimes it's against the Steelers, but I think there is value in beating an elite quarterback on the road with your backup quarterback and, you know, showing things that you haven't really been able to show before with the personnel that you're given in this certain situation. So there's still a lot that we do know about Zach Taylor. Not a lot of it's great. And I don't think a win over the Texans means that he's going to go over 500 next year, even though that should be the goal. But it does give you slightly more confidence, or just more confidence saying, you know what, he's going to get year three anyways. Let's just see how it goes. At least I think we're more open to something changing dramatically, even though it's still kind of unlikely.
This is cool. Every once in a while, we have a couple of comments that stop us in the tracks, babe. Evening from snowy Scotland, Saturday until 1:42 a.m. to catch the show tonight from John Wallace. Not sure if he's a distant relative of William Wallace from Scotland there, but that's just awesome to hear. Thanks, John. Appreciate that. And Andrew Seiler making me feel like just second fiddle galore here. John is my hero. I am the Robin to your Batman there, John. But good to see everybody. We're sharing some holiday cheer with everybody, putting some comments up. And I saw Dalton Signature, the guy who is the graphic artist extraordinaire, joining us via Twitter. Good to see everybody joining us. But yeah, you know, it's really weird what winning does. You know, I was on another show previewing the Ravens game, and they were asking me, you know, what do you think about Zach Taylor? And I said, if you asked me this 3 weeks ago, this would have been a completely different answer than what we're talking about now. And I think I said this on the post-game show, that if you all of a sudden, as the Cincinnati Bengals, if you're able to beat Pittsburgh on primetime, you're able to go in and beat Deshaun Watson on his home field, even though the Houston Texans are struggling, if you're able to do that, and then a third win in a row, take out the Baltimore Ravens, knock them out of the playoffs, and then you come into next year, you know, you've more than doubled your win total from the year prior. If you're Zach Taylor, you're getting Joe Burrow back, fingers crossed. Maybe you're feeling a little better about things. Still, though, John, I mean, at this point, you know, we're still looking at, what, six wins and a tie in almost two full seasons of football, and that's not getting it done. That's not getting it done, but I guess, do you take stock in – I know we've heard Matt Minnick talk about it on the pregame show and on his Twitter account. Do you take stock in the – quote unquote, guys aren't quitting on Zach Taylor? Are you witnessing that on the field? I see it in a lot of senses, but I don't know how much belief I have in that, personally speaking.
Yeah, it's the fact that guys are quote unquote buying in, if that's the perception. We don't obviously know that. There was just a lot of stuff that came out that kind of explained to the contrary, and not a lot of it was necessarily concrete or confirmed, but when there's smoke, there's usually fire, and we kind of saw the instances with Carlos Dunlap and stuff like that. But I do think, to an extent, like, most of the locker room is behind him. I think that was always the kind of thing. There's just too many, you know, unnamed sources that kind of came up against him. But in reverse of that, like, the team is buying in, and they're still fired up, and they still want to prove something. But on the other end of the spectrum, like, why does this happen so many times with the Bengals? Why do they sometimes just can't tend to catch fire in December when the season's lost? Is it because they have something to prove, or is it because teams just aren't taking them necessarily seriously? I don't think the Steelers took the Bengals seriously at all a week ago, and I think it's fair to say that the Texans didn't really take them seriously. And it's almost the same thing with the offensive line. How last season against the Dolphins, the Browns twice without Myles Garrett against the Jets, offensive line played so much better. And then that created a false confidence into that group, saying, you know, maybe there's development there and they don't have to invest that much. Maybe they can continue to grow, when it was literally just fool's gold. And we're kind of seeing the same thing again this season. So I think it's important to learn that this is not the first time that we've seen these things. And there's definitely still improvements that need to be made. Progress is progress. Wins are wins. And that can definitely buy you confidence and faith and trust in the whole message and the culture and everything like that. But you can't ignore what you already know. And I think that's the important message. And I guess if we want to talk about resolutions early, it's a resolution that they need to actually learn and apply to.
So you see the comment here from Andrew Costigan on Facebook. If you watch 90s Bengals, you know that's what we are seeing right now. Lose all year, kick ass the last 3 to 4 games to get hopes up for next season. I mean, it is very similar. We've got a stat of the week to share, and we've got another stat that we will reference as we preview the Ravens game later on that kind of points to this. But here's my worry, John. As much as I like to see the progress, and when you beat the Steelers on Monday Night Football, you beat Deshaun Watson on his home field, potentially beat a supposedly playoff-bound Ravens team if you do that this week, as good as that would feel to end the season this way, I get afraid of the old Bengals mindset of believing in what they currently have because of this late season progress, and hanging their laurels on, you know, hey, we're good. We're getting better on the offensive line. We don't need to make the big improvements in free agency. Hey, we're getting better at wide receiver. We don't need to make the big improvement. You know what I'm saying? I really just want the Bengals to still say, I like the progress, but it's still not good enough. We need to be better. I think you're muted, buddy.
And I don't think that we can ignore that when we see video of Joe Burrow taking his first steps in a month. Like, that's still 100% in their minds. Like, this all happened because we were negligent at one of the most important position groups. And if Sam Hubbard doesn't make that strip sack against Deshaun Watson, it could have easily been another blown lead in the final 2 minutes. And then who knows if Lou Narumos is still around this time next week. Sam Hubbard might have just saved his job. It was not the first time that the defense almost blew an opportunity for the offense. But at the same time, I think, turning back to the positive side of things, this was the first time that we saw, I think, a performance on offense that was that can be benefited a lot towards Zach Taylor and the play calling and the scheme and stuff like that. Because, you know, the whole thing was talking about, was Joe Burrow the sole reason why there were these improvements on offense? And if it wasn't Zach Taylor, then what value does he have? This is like the fifth or sixth game or whatever when he's had a backup quarterback in there. And not only was it a quality game from the quarterback, he blacked out. You know, he made so many big time throws and no negative throws. Brandon Allen, he won the FedEx Air Player of the Week, beating Tom Brady and Andy Dalton for that honor. Like, it was a fantastic passing display after what we thought was just a scripted offense that was going to be figured out by the Texans. You know, the second quarter on, he just made big time throw after big time throw and avoided mistakes. And I think you have to credit a lot of that to Taylor. For the first time, it looked like his play calling and his offensive philosophy was actually elevating the talent around him. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Brandon Allen played superb. And, you know, it was kind of pedestrian backup style play against the Giants in his first start, right? Second start, there was improvements, still not stellar, gets hurt. Finley comes in. Now this third start, he comes in, and it's just, it was, I think he had a higher quarterback rating than Burrow had for the entire year, which is like, what? You mentioned he won the FedEx Player of the Year. I mean, are you pretty set, before we move on to some of the other performances that in this game, are you pretty sold on Brandon Allen being a solid backup option for the team in 21 based on what you've seen, not only this week, but in prior weeks?
It's going to be interesting to hear our responses to this right now and what we can say after this week when they face a much tougher defense than the Ravens. Like, the Texans had J.J. Watt and Zach Cunningham, and that was it. It was backups and guys who had to be playing for suspended players. It was a skeleton crew for that Texas defense. So, but that's what you should expect. You should expect your backups to do well, or at least play decently against other backups. So I think baseline, Allen is a guy that you would like to have around to see what he can do in 2021. But there's also tape of him just underperforming against other defenses leading up to this game. Maybe it was just the fact that he's had his feet wet in the offense. He's had a lot of reps as the starter. And I mean, this is him coming back from injury too. So there's that factor in it as well. So the perception might change after this game against the Ravens, who are going to be much tougher and get into his space more often. But right now, I think you can be confident that he's at least a solid backup.
I think, depending on what happens this next week, but I mean, I think right now, as we sit here, we can say, you know, maybe he has the inside track on the backup quarterback position, and you bring in someone that can really kind of compete with him for that next year. I don't think Finley is competition for him based on what we've seen so far from Ryan Finley. I think you kind of maybe move on from there. Maybe if he is practice squad eligible, you can stash him there. But I think, you know, at this point, Brandon Allen should have maybe the inside track if Zach Taylor stays, because obviously it's kind of a system guy, right? If Zach Taylor indeed stays, which I think we all believe he will now based on these last 2 weeks, Brandon Allen stays, has the inside track on the backup quarterback position. Maybe you bring in another guy to compete with him. I know this is going to be right up your wheelhouse, John, talking about running backs. I know there was kind of some mixed opinions on extending Mixon this year, and the Bengals paid some money to him. And as in true Bengal fashion, a big contract gets doled out and the player is injured throughout most of the season. And really the only game that Joe Mixon shined, and I'm a big Joe Mixon guy, the only game he shined was against the Jacksonville Jaguars, where he had a big game and then hasn't really played much since. We saw basically Samaje Perine and Gio Bernard, I think they combined for, what, 160 rushing yards, and then they combined for close to 110 receiving yards. What do you make of all this, John, and offensive line play, et cetera? Because obviously those two guys have been key. The balance on offense, it's been key as to why the Bengals have beat the Steelers and Texans in back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, you mentioned that Jaguars game for Mixon. Without that game, he's averaging 2.9 yards per carry this season.
Whoa.
And the first response to that, and rightfully so, is, well, the offensive line's been bad. The offensive line's been bad for 3 years. Like, at this, it comes back to the same argument. If the offensive line is bad, and that's the reason why your running back isn't producing well, why are you paying the running back? That was the whole argument. And then it was, oh, well, Mixon needs to get involved more in the passing game. It's an inefficient way to run an offense that way if you're targeting running backs more than your wide receivers and tight ends. With Pirine and Bernard, they're still playing against behind a bad offensive line. But I don't know, man. You just watch Pirine, and he just makes more efficient cuts and more efficient reads than Mixon ever does. And I say that knowing that Mixon is the better athlete, and he's younger, and he's got more juice. And I think anybody would prefer him as the athlete over Pirine, but Pirine just seems like he knows what he's doing more than Mixon, and there's a lot less hesitation. And the offense is just really efficient when he's running the ball. All he needs is just decent blocking. Like that 46-yard run against the Texans, that touchdown.
It's pretty.
Yeah, it's better. It's better than anything I've ever seen from Mixon in terms of what ended up being a touchdown. Like it's impressive. And I mean, there's a reason why he rushed for 400 yards in the game for Oklahoma. I remember when both of them came out in that draft. I'm like, Pirine kind of seems more impressive to me than Mixon. And that's ignoring all the off-field stuff with Mixon and what made him an overall draft prospect. So, you know, as someone who, I mean, this year, I didn't think Pirine was going to make the roster, but he's obviously has a lot of value with this coaching staff and in that position group. And I think he's earned a chance to stick around because he's just a solid player and he just gets the job done regardless of who's in front of him.
There's a lot of comments. I put up a few about Mixon and, you know, look, Mixon, if you think back to Le'Veon Bell when he was with the Steelers and at his prime, there's a lot of similarities in terms of the patience that Mixon tries to exude to find a hole. The difference is, and I think you're kind of alluding to it, John, and some of our commenters are as well, the difference is the Bengals haven't had the offensive line talent up front for him to be able to pick and choose his holes and be as patient as he wants to be to bust the big play. Whereas I think with Gio Bernard and Samaje Perine, you're finding a better fit with the deficiencies on the offensive line because there's not a lot of time to sit there and pick and choose your hole. It's decide and go. And I think that's kind of something, a realization I've kind of come to a little bit over these past couple of weeks is, and I like Mixon. It's not to say that Mixon doesn't have a future with the Bengals and it won't be a productive guy or anything like that. I just think that there's a mismatch between Mixon's skill set and the skill set of the offensive line in front of him and the footwork and patience that Mixon tries to exude in the backfield as compared to these other two guys.
And maybe with a better offensive line, a more effective offensive line, you will see a more consistent and better Mixon overall. But again, it's the chicken over the egg. If you have to, you know, revolve the whole offense around your running back in order to make the running back more effective, like it all goes back to the same argument. It's an argument that we've spouted for months and months on the show. And at the end of the day, Bengals have a lot of good running backs. It's not an issue that they really have to worry about. It's just about finding an offensive line that helps these guys out more.
Yeah, and look, the other thing to kind of go against what I just said is if you look back the past two seasons with Mixon in 2018, the last year of Marvin, and in 2019, he was one of, if not the best back in football over the last half of each of those seasons. He was incredible. The first half of the season was a lot of just negative runs and like you said, that 2.9 yards per carry. You had a lot of that at the beginning of the season. It was kind of a reversal towards the end of the last two seasons. Unfortunately, he didn't get the chance to prove or turn things around this year. But like you said, there is a good problem in terms of the talent at running back there. Quickly, before we move on to stat of the week and all of that, just overall impressions from you by the wide receiver group. No Tyler Boyd, AJ Green kind of up and down this week. T. Higgins just continues to be to prove that he is a stud.
There's one drive. I think in the third quarter, it was a third and long. Allen just trusted AJ Green on like a hitch route. And he was completely smothered. Green somehow came down with the cornerback all draped up around him. Very next play, they ran like four verts. Alex Erickson of all guys, just running wide open up the seam, getting some yards up to catch. The very next play, T. Higgins, his best catch of the year, that touchdown, that toe tap. Like it was insane. Like it was Alex Erickson's best game in a long time. And it took a little bit for AJ Green to kind of get going. I know it's kind of seemed like they were force feeding him early in the game. That's what led to, I think, that first third down failure on like third and short. And I think Higgins had a drop or two to start, but they all kind of caught alive. And it was nice to see the quarterback actually making some great tight window throws and just trusting them in those situations against cornerbacks that they should have beaten and they should have been able to moss over him. And it was great to see them do that without Boyd out there. And now we have two receivers on the brink of history.
Yep. and we'll talk about that a little bit. But yeah, Higgins is going to potentially set some nice rookie records with the Cincinnati Bengals coming up in this last game of the season. And I mean, was he 21, 22? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still very, very young. And the only thing I can say at this point, I mean, we know he doesn't have the burning long speed, but it's okay. It's good enough. And he can high point the ball. The only other thing I can say that he needs to clean up in his game is maybe clean up a few of the concentration drops. But I mean, other than that, I think the Bengals have a very good wide receiver in the making in this kid. So, I think that's a good takeaway from this game. A couple of great, great catches by him going forward. One more thing, John, before we transition, some talk in the chat, and I guess your quick thoughts on the Bengals winning and sacrificing draft position, their sacred draft position, and maybe losing out on Penei Sewell. How do you feel about that? I want Sewell, but at the same time, it's kind of like you got to start winning games. Is kind of my opinion.
Teams don't tank, but I know, like, fans and front offices, I guess they want to tank for quarterbacks. As long as the Bengals have a quarterback, there's no need to purposely lose games for the sake of draft positioning. It's nice and sexy to have like a top three pick locked in. You can get whatever player that you want, assuming that the first two picks are quarterbacks, but they're going to get a good player regardless, and they can't revolve their entire offseason plans around guaranteeing themselves the best offensive tackle in the draft or the best wide receiver in the draft. They need to handle their business in free agency and see what happens in the draft. Yeah. If they happen to fall to like the 6, 7, 8 range, they're still going to get a very talented player. They can get one of the great receivers. They can get a Kyle Pitts. They can still get an offensive tackle, because I think it's very up in the air, like how the rest of that board or that position falls after Sewell. So they're going to be in a good spot regardless. It's not worth purposely losing. I guess it's still meaningless games at the end of the day because they're not going to the playoffs, but there is a sense of building up some form of confidence. And this coaching staff has to sell this message. We talked about it with Matt throughout the last month, like when they still had Burrow, they need to build wins. And if they produce results in the next year, it's not meaningless. And we don't know if that's going to happen yet or not. But at this point, like they need to build some confidence with that. So as long as you have a quarterback, you don't really need to tank anyways.
Yeah. And they, I guess, supposedly tanked last year. You got your quarterback. I think all of us believe in Joe Burrow, even though he got hurt this year. What you're wanting, hopefully, is a little more belief in your coach. And if you're able to string together these wins at the end of the season, you got to feel pretty good about that. And look, every year, John, we know this in the draft. Everybody sitting on their couch and, oh, that guy's not going to be there. He'll never be there. He's going to be long gone by then. He'll never be there. And lo and behold, guys fall. Guys end up in certain spots. And all of a sudden, you know, your team's like, oh, wow, this guy's still here. We'll take him. The fact if the Bengals sit at 5, 6, something like that, it's not completely out of the realm of possibility that Sewell will be there if that's the guy. But like you said, there are some nice options as well. Pitts seems like an absolute freak if they're able to use that kind of position correctly. They've got some good wide receivers on the board if they want to go that route. And this seems to be a pretty good offensive line class coming into this draft too. So
also trade down, still a thing.
Yep, for sure. Absolutely, especially with a handful of quarterbacks in this draft that seem to be highly coveted that are coming out. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. We're going to get to a stat of the week. We're going to talk about the Ravens game, and we're going to give you some Bengals New Year's resolutions to close out this show. You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, Megaphone, iHeartRadio, wherever you like to stream your podcast. Leave us a review if you can, whether it's our show or Orange is the New Black, Chalk Talk, any of that, any of the shows on the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. Leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel right under that little Nike logo on John. Is Nike sponsoring the show? I don't know if Nike's sponsoring
the show. I have not heard back from them. I've written
Subscribe to the YouTube channel so you can get all of our content and get notified when we go live. And you can also follow us on Twitter at BengalsOBI.
There were a lot of options for this week's stat of the week. I know, I think it was either Ben Baby or Jay Morrison who tweeted out like the Texans had the biggest yards per play for a team that lost, like 9.5 or something. It was something ridiculous. But this one, I'm going to go a little bit different, involving both quarterbacks in this game. I was so excited to watch this game because of Deshaun Watson. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks and just players in the NFL to watch in general. Regardless of what his team does, he's always exciting and he always produces. And he's always the reason why they end up being games or just win. And I was just not, and it was even more entertaining because I wasn't expecting Brandon Allen to match and really outplay him. And this is how insane that this game was. A couple stats here. Completion percentage over expectation and aggressiveness percentage. Both are coined by Next Gen Stats. I think we've talked about completion percentage over expectation. It's just your completion percentage differential between what your expected completion percentage is and what your actual completion percentage is. And aggressiveness is essentially the percentage of passes that enter tight windows where the closest defender is within like 1 yard of the receiver. So this game, it featured two quarterbacks that combined for an aggressiveness percentage of 42.8%. It was by far the biggest combined percentage out of any game this week, topping like I think the Packers and Titans game with Ryan Tannehill and Aaron Rodgers. That game was like in the 30s or something like that, mainly because Ryan Tannehill played really well in that game. And it was the second highest combined completion percentage over expectation with like 17%. I think Deshaun Watson had a completion percentage over expectation of like 6%, and Brandon Allen had a completion percentage over expectation of 11%. So both quarterbacks dealing, making these high quality throws, making these throws in tight windows and completing them and creating big gains. It's what you expect out of a game that ends like 37-31. And it was a performance that I think a lot of us expected Deshaun Watson to have, but it just really signifies how impressive Brandon Allen was out there, matching him every single drive and targeting these big body receivers and just making throws that we've just never really seen from this guy before. And you know, it's throws that, you know, they were just moon balls. They weren't like high velocity, so you'd figure a guy with Allen's arm to be able to make, but for him to just consistently be making them time and time again, after it seemed like that offense was kind of figured out after they're just throwing screens and screens, it was impressive. And it, you know, he deserves all the credit in the world, and Zach deserves the credit for kind of scheming those plays up against that defense.
Yeah, credit both Zach Taylor and Brandon Allen, because they just had the confidence. You know, they were like, well, you know, they're kind of catching on, and they would catch on to the screen game a little bit, right, in the short passing game, and then all of a sudden it's like, we're going deep, and Brandon Allen on these deep passes, while, you know, he doesn't have a rocket arm or anything, I think you would agree, John, that they were the ball placement on them were kind of like, well, the receiver's got the best shot at making this grab, even though it may be a contested catch. It wasn't like an absolute freak. I mean, the T. Higgins touchdown catch was, but it was placed well, right? I mean, the ball placement on these deep balls were placed very well. And then lo and behold, what happened later in the game, they were able to get some more yardage out of the screen game because they've stretched the field a bit. So I thought that was pretty clever by Zach Taylor and Brandon Allen, and showed a lot of confidence by both guys. You're muted again.
Every time. Yeah, as a quarterback, if you can't win with, you know, velocity like a Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, you have to win with anticipation and touch, and that's exactly what he showed. Like, there were just some plays, some out routes with T. Higgins where he would just time it right out of his break and go throw it right where only Higgins can get it. And I think that touchdown was the perfect example of that, where he just threw right over his shoulder. Cornerback made as good of a play as you could expect, but that's Higgins' bread and butter. And, you know, I think it speaks to the amount of reps that Allen was starting to get with those guys, and it just kind of all came together at the right time.
Yep. So that is the stat of the week, courtesy of John Sheeran. He does some great research and brings us all of that, all of the numbers specific to either that week or the Cincinnati Bengals in general. So good stuff, John. What do you think? Do we need to transition to the game this week?
Yeah, let's do that. So, you know, this is not the first time that the Ravens are coming to Paul Brown Stadium for week 17. It's happened a handful of times in the late Marvin Lewis era, and most of the time it's ended up pretty successful. Going back to Jay Morrison, he's pretty much on top of this stuff. He found out that like the last, like 12 or 11 times the Bengals have been underdogs with a losing record at home in week 17, they've ended up winning or like covering the spread. A couple of those times happened against the Ravens, but there's a lot more than just knocking the Ravens out of the playoffs and getting a third win in a row. It's going to be a bittersweet game, I think, for a lot of people. You know, Geno Atkins is not going to be able to play in this game, but people are pretty much assuming that he's going to be a cap casualty for this game. But I think the main story's got to be AJ Green, Anthony. You know, this is against the team that he's been so dominant against, and for him to all but likely end and finish out his career against this team at home, and a chance to ruin their season, just like they did in 2017, when that time it was Tyler Boyd with Andy Dalton kind of knocking the Ravens out of the playoffs. Is that the biggest storyline here? Is it also along with the fact that T. Higgins can also make history?
I think those kind of go hand in hand a little bit. I think there's maybe a little bit of a passing of a baton type of thing. And I think as we sit here today, I don't think there's much of a chance that AJ Green and Geno Atkins are back with the Cincinnati Bengals next year. I think, unfortunately, that's just kind of it's just kind of the reality of it. And it would be nice to have a good send-off for AJ Green, whatever that may look like. But, I think that has to be one of the top storylines, and especially since AJ Green has had so much success against the Baltimore Ravens in his career and really kind of almost single-handedly won a lot of those games with his individual performances, he and Dalton together. And, you know, I remember back in, 16 or 17 when he came down with a Hail Mary, maybe it was 14, came down with a Hail Mary just to even tie the game. The Bengals ended up losing that one in overtime, but just to send it to overtime, it was just a miraculous play. And I would think that AJ Green has to be one of the top storylines this week, as he may be putting on a Bengals uniform, especially playing in Paul Brown Stadium for probably the last time.
Yeah, so and just kind of quantifying what this game kind of means, I think AJ is, I believe, 2 touchdowns away from breaking the franchise record for receiving touchdowns. T. Higgins is 1 catch away from passing Chris Collinsworth's rookie reception record, and he's about, I think, 92 yards away from crossing the 1,000-yard threshold. He's only about 40 yards away from passing Eddie Brown on the rookie receiving yardage record. He has a long way to go to get to A.J. Green for that honor. I think he's at like a little bit under 1,100 yards. But it's interesting because, you know, this Ravens team, they're kind of peaking at the right time. They've won a handful of games in a row now, and that's why they're back into the playoff race after they were like 6-5 and looking like they were kind of found out. But if there's one part of that team that's struggling right now, it's the secondary. And we're recording this on Wednesday, and both cornerbacks, Marcus Peters was limited with a calf injury. I think Marlon Humphrey did not practice with an injury. So even if those two guys play, they're kind of banged up. And that secondary is kind of struggling right now. I think they're like 27th in DVOA and over the past month or so. So it's an opportunity for both those guys to take advantage of potential mismatches. And you have Tyler Boyd, I think, coming back. At least he was limited today, and he's still kind of in the concussion protocol, but having him back on the field would definitely help as well. But also, you know, with the Ravens kind of peaking at the right time and looking like the Ravens of earlier in the season, there's a factor with that, with how the Bengals have also been kind of improving. Like, I don't think the Bengals are necessarily like it's different than what it was against the Steelers, where the Steelers didn't take them seriously. They were looking like they weren't going to win another game. Bengals shocked the world. Then the Bengals go out and beat a mostly bad and backup team with the Texans. Ravens, if they lose this game, they're out of the playoffs. And they've seen the Bengals improve in the past 2 weeks. So we've seen 2 wins in a row. So we're thinking a third win's not out of the equation here with how well they've played. But it's got to be a different mentality with their opponent being as good as they are, but also knowing what they've done in the past couple weeks. It doesn't seem like the Bengals are going to be taking anybody by surprise here.
No. And just quick segue, Robert Obrecht says Geno still has a few years on his deal. I mentioned Geno Atkins maybe not coming back with the Cincinnati Bengals. He does have a few years on his deal left, but there was a report just a couple of weeks ago when he was put on IR that the two sides are going to meet this offseason, talk about things, and it seems unlikely that Geno Atkins is going to be back. So that's why I mentioned his name also as a guy who may not be back next year. But, yeah, I mean, you look at the injury report for the Cincinnati Bengals. You got Mike Daniels, who, by the way, has really quietly been playing very well the past couple of weeks. He had the veteran rest. B.J. Finney, you've got the same thing with A.J. Green, the veteran rest. William Jackson, that concussion. So, to your point about these injuries, et cetera, I mean, are you expecting a high-scoring game, especially what we saw with Brandon Allen last week and possible return of Tyler Boyd? I would assume Boyd's back personally, but we know concussions can be tricky. But, I mean, should we expect that the Bengals are actually going to put up some points this week? Based on the cornerback injuries that you mentioned by the Ravens, and I'll bring some of their injury report up there, Marcus Peters, et cetera. I don't know. What do you think?
I think we can assume that the Ravens are going to be able to score points. I think this past week showed us that while there have been some progress made on defense with Lou and Arumo, it's mainly been about the fact that they've been playing really bad offenses, and Ravens with Lamar Jackson and that running game and the offensive line kind of finally coming together, I think they're going to have no trouble scoring 20, 30 points in this game. And it is going to be about if Brandon Allen can match that for a second week in a row, because while the secondary is struggling for Baltimore, that pass rush is going to be better than what Houston had on the field. Texans only pressured Allen, I think, four times in that game, and no one around the offensive line for the Bengals really played that well. It was just the fact that it was J.J. Watt and nobody else out there that was creating any disruption, and J.J. Watt, unfortunately, isn't the talent that used to be for that team. So it's definitely going to be a wake-up call to see if that defense can try to hold them under 30 points, because that's what it might take for this offense to kind of match it. And it's going to be a tougher task, even if it's at home, even if you have maybe Tyler Boyd coming back and you have continuity on that offensive line. It's a defense that has already dominated this offense with Joe Burrow at the helm. So, I mean, who knows what they have in store for a backup quarterback that has yet to really still prove himself against a competent defense.
Last time these two teams faced, and granted, I think Joe Burrow kind of tried to make things happen a little bit more backyard football style. He scrambles around, maneuvers the pocket a little more than Brandon Allen. Brandon Allen does a little bit more of play to live another down type of thing. But regardless, the Baltimore Ravens, who had struggled to rush the quarterback, they got seven sacks on this team, to your point, John. And I think they did a lot of it using blitzers, which we knew they kind of needed to do that in order to get the pressure that they ended up getting. But that's a different animal than what kind of we saw last week. Maybe akin a bit to what Pittsburgh is doing. So I don't know if you alter your game plan maybe to do some of those quarterback draws, do some of those things that Ryan Finley did to Pittsburgh to negate some of those that quarterback the quarterback pressures, the pass rush, etc. But to your point, I think this is going to be a little bit different animal than what we saw last week in Houston.
Right, and against Houston, even with that weak pass rush, they kind of hid the offensive line a lot with what they did early on with the screens and stuff. But Allen didn't really hold the ball long that much in that game. He had like 30 something attempts, and only like 10 of them he held the ball for like more than 2.5 seconds. So can they do that against the Ravens? Are they able to get those quick short passes and manufacture some yardage like that against the defense? It's just more talented, or are they going to be forced to play a more traditional game and having to drop back in these 5-step drops and having to have guys get open down the field? It they can do that against the secondary, but can the offensive line hold up against a much better defensive line? I don't know. It's going to be, how well does the scripted offense work early in the game? I know someone said like they should just run the same offense that they did against the Steelers. It's probably not going to work again. It's probably not going to work for Brandon Allen this time out. Who knows if Allen is a better athlete than Finley? I didn't think Finley was good. Was a good athlete, but apparently he surprised us. He surprised us all. So who knows? I think it's definitely going to be tougher, even though they have some matchups in store against that secondary. But it's the offense is going to have to score a lot, because I don't see the Bengals defense kind of stopping what this Ravens offense is doing right now.
Yeah, kind of a tale. I go flip into the other side of the ball. Kind of a tale of two different games. For the Bengals defense against the Steelers, they kind of had their way, right? They rushed the quarterback. They forced three turnovers, allowed what, just 17 points in that one. And then this week they allow 31, and David Johnson had like 10 yards per carry, 11 yards per carry. And they were not the same defense that we saw the week prior. So if you're Lou Anarumo, do you focus just strictly on this Ravens rushing attack, the option game, the multiple running backs that they have that are very talented? Or do you try, and maybe if you have to pick your poison between the different choices here, do you maybe try and say, you know what, we're going to take away your tight ends, because we know Lamar likes to use those tight ends, particularly in the red zone in the middle of the field, to extend drives? What do you think is a better strategy as you sit here today?
I think that's more or less what they tried to do in the first game. And we have to credit Anarumo for that first performance. I mean, Lamar Jackson did not have a good game back in October when they played him. And they played a lot of three linebacker sets with Akeem Davis-Gaither out there with Jermaine Pratt and Josh Bynes. And they handled that read option stuff and that general option stuff really well. I think Lamar only had like 2 or 3 yards rushing for that game.
Yeah.
They're clicking on more cylinders now, so it's going to be tougher because they have some momentum going into this game. And you know, the Bengals defense personnel wise still isn't that impressive and they're easily exploitable. But I think they had a formula that worked back in October and they're going to be trying to do the same things, but the Ravens can easily adjust and it'll be about how the Bengals adjust back, because at the end of the day, it's Carl Lawson and nobody else rushing the passer out there. Same how we're miking home a couple times a game, but I think the Ravens offense line is going to be capable enough to at least limit him for most of the game. So Carl Lawson needs another great game. The linebackers need to continue playing fast. They're probably not going to have Logan Wilson out there. He's still not practicing with that ankle injury. So you need a great revenge game from Josh Bynes. Jermaine Pratt has, to his credit, taken a leap forward in the second half of the season. So you need him to play well again. And Von Bell, Jesse Bates, you know, locking down on Mark Andrews and those tight ends and those over the middle seam routes. So it's going to take a complete effort to kind of re-emulate what they did back in October, because I mean, the offense is still capable of just breaking a whole defense down.
Yeah, and Jesse Bates, after that loss earlier this year, said basically we knew what they were going to do. And I think there was kind of a double-edged sword both in saying we knew what they were going to do. We were able to stop Lamar with Lamar's legs, essentially, but Lamar still had his way utilizing the tight ends and getting points scored on us. So, I would assume there's going to be some similarities in the defensive game plan going forward. And, hopefully a better result instead of that 27-3 debacle when the Bengals kicked a field goal with, a minute left. And that, to the chagrin of the Ravens defensive coordinator there, to avoid the shutout. We're gonna transition to call your shot here. What are some keys for you, and how do you see this one playing out? Do you think the Bengals can pull out a third straight win at home and end the season on a high note like they did last year against the Cleveland Browns?
Well, they do pretty well when I say they're gonna lose of late, so I might as well say they're gonna lose. But it would mean, to answer the original point of this whole preview, it would mean a lot for them to win this game and actually compete. Every game had a different factor to it. With the Steelers, they caught everybody by surprise. They embodied that underdog mentality. Texans, at the end of the day, just not a very impressive team, and they were able to take advantage of a backups of a defense that was comprised of backups. Ravens, they're going to be fighting for their damn lives, and they're peaking at the right time. If they are able to beat this team, it would mean so much. It would probably mean the most out of any of these three wins, even though Pittsburgh was in prime time and it was against the Steelers of all teams. It would be the most impressive considering who they're going up against, because the Steelers just aren't impressive right now. They're not playing very good football, even though they just beat the Colts. So if they're able to win, it would mean a ton. It would be one of the greatest meaningless wins of recent history. But I just don't see them doing enough. I think Allen and the receivers are going to have some production there, but I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball as well against them as they did against the Texans. Texans, by the way, had like the second worst rush defense entering that game. And I think the Ravens offense is going to be able to do a little bit more.
So can the Bengals win this game? Yeah. Based on what we've seen the last 2 weeks. Yeah. Will they? It's unlikely. I mean, they're 11.5, 12 point underdogs for a reason at home. Essentially, I think they will need to have played a game that combines the defensive performance of Pittsburgh and the offensive performance of Houston to be able to pull this one out. I think you could say they played a somewhat complete game against Pittsburgh, but I mean, look at the passing stats of Ryan Finley. They weren't able to pass the football. You're going to need to be able to run the football. You're going to need to be able to do enough in the passing game, and you're going to need to limit the damage from Baltimore to be able to get this one. And really, the Bengals, and largely under Zach Taylor, have not really put together many complete games, three-phase games. And even when you've got, you know, the defense doing some things, the offense doing some things, the kicker hasn't always been reliable when they need him to be. So, you know, it's a cliche, and I hate to use it, but it's a three-phase game if the Bengals want to do something this week. I think that the Baltimore Ravens will win this game. I think it'll be a nice, a fun one to watch. But there is something that's just telling me, you know, is that 2017 magic gonna come back? Are the Bengals gonna have this comeback, just kind of storybook win to end a really terrible campaign, but really just kind of put a nice ribbon on it? I think it's possible, but I'm not hanging my hat on that this week. I just don't know. There's a lot to overcome this week. They're going to need to play very, very well in order for that to happen.
They are going to need to play very, very well. And like you said, like no one can really have a down game in this. It's going to be a playoff like just feel to it, you know, with however many fans are on the crowd. But both sides are going to want to win this game really badly. And as much as the Bengals, whoever was still on that 2017 team, whoever was still on that team will still remember that game, and they can have confidence that they can feel like they can replicate it. I'm sure the Ravens remember that just as well, and they're not going to want to repeat. They're not going to want to repeat history. So it's going to be tough. I don't think the Ravens are going to blow them out necessarily, but I can see them winning like something in like the 28-24 range.
Yeah. This is an interesting question. Kind of maybe not totally. It's kind of a non sequitur to this, but kind of going on this social weed tard. That's an interesting name. What do you think, which team will go further in the playoffs, Browns or Squealers? You could even throw the Ravens in there. What if all three make it? Just out of curiosity, who do you think's got the most playoff viability between those three teams?
You know, it's funny because I have no data to back this up, but it just seems whether it's college football bowl season or the NFL playoffs, if a lot of teams from a certain conference or division are playing in the playoffs, it always seems like that division is the one that does the worst, or like no team wins or something like that. Like I remember just in recent years, like Power Five conferences end up going like 0-0 for whatever in bowl games. Like in the NCAA tournament, like certain conferences don't get out of the first or second round. And it feels like whenever there's like two or three teams from a certain division, that they end up like all failing at it or just not winning a single game. I could totally see that with the AFC North, because each team kind of just has certain warts to it. I don't expect the Steelers to win a single playoff game, not with what's going on at quarterback. I don't think anything that they do is sustainable right now, unless they just have TJ Watt and the rest of that defense play out of their minds. And it's entirely possible that they play the Browns in the playoffs, and maybe the Browns get their first playoff win in three decades or however long it's been. If I had to pick one team, though, it's probably the Browns, because we just yet to see Lamar Jackson and that offense play well in a playoff like atmosphere or in a playoff game. I think in the two games that he's played, he's just not been impressive. Like we just said, the Steelers are impressive right now. The Browns might have the capability to be one or two teams, but I don't see them going necessarily very far unless Baker Mayfield plays really well and outplays another playoff quarterback. So if I had to guess, I would guess it's the Browns, but they're also the Browns. We have never seen them do anything like this in a while.
Yeah, I mean, the Browns running game maybe tells you that they could do some things. The Steelers, it's hard to believe in them, but they still are the Steelers. I mean, this is their time of year that they start to play well. They get things right. They just tend to do that. I mean, I think a lot of people were thinking for an 11-win team, they were on the mat last week, and especially on that losing streak, and then they just kind of cue the Undertaker video clip there and just came back and beat the Colts. And, you know, now it's kind of a different theme. I don't know. I still think Baltimore's got something there if they can get in. You know, they've got maybe enough to go through. But I still think, you know, when it's all said and done, this what Kansas City's doing and you know, I mean, it's just – it's hard to get through that buzzsaw. So – but interesting question. I just thought that was kind of an interesting one. If you're the Cincinnati Bengals, we're heading into 2021 – thankfully, mercifully, after this year, you've made a commitment to Zach Taylor. It sounds like they're going to keep that commitment, or it seems as if they're going to keep that commitment to at least him for next year. What if you're the Bengals, and you can give more than one, what are some New Year's resolutions if you are the Cincinnati Bengals as an organization? What are you going to commit to doing? What are you going to commit to performing, or what are you committing to as an organization as we head into the new year? If you're sitting in that front office, John Sheeran, what would you be committing to?
Well, as the imaginary GM in this scenario, I think it's very important to know that this roster for like the third or second year in a row is not entirely fixable in one off season. So if there's something that you have to prioritize and you have to make sure that you address to your absolute fullest, it's to make sure that Burrow is helped at all costs, whether that be protection, getting a competent AJ Green replacement. If you can only do one thing, though, invest in the offensive line. Actually invest. I think there's enough smoke right now where that is probably going to be the case, where they just look at the past 4 years and how they've tried to go with these low-cost options to replace Kevin Zeiler, to eventually replace Andrew Whitworth at the tackle spot. It just seems like this is going to be the year where they actually make sizable, meaningful investments into actual NFL players at least one or two spots along that offensive line. This Ravens game is going to be interesting because, I mean, like we talked about earlier, the offensive line is quote-unquote improving, but how much is that due to the fact that they've not really played that well or impressive of opponents? And against the Steelers, they've really hid that offensive line because they only passed the ball like 10 times in that game. So against the Ravens, though, that's a much more challenging test. And if they perform actually competently in those situations that matter, then you have an idea about which guys can stick around for 2021 and at least be part of the conversation. But at least two of these starting jobs are 100% open to people that are not in the organization right now. And it has to be the central focus of this entire offseason of making sure that that position group is solidified, not leading up to the draft or not after the draft. You can't put all your eggs in just one pick and fixing it, making sure that it's fixed before the draft, supplementing those fixes with draft picks, however you want to address it like that. It has to be done. It just has to be.
Yeah. Not just getting guys, getting the guys. Right up yes. front, but that's a very good one. And I think while it may be obvious, I think it's of utmost importance. It's totally of utmost importance. And if you're going to compete in this division, which the Bengals have not in recent years, whether it's under Zach Taylor or the tail end of Marvin Lewis's tenure, you got to have an offensive line. You got to have an offensive line. You got to have a defensive line. So good one there. I would just, you know, I know this team loves its little mantras, whether it was Marvin Lewis or these, you know, seize the day and new day and all that kind of stuff. I don't want to get too corny or hokey with them, but basically I would just live by the mantra of not good enough. What we have seen for the past half decade is simply not good enough. And no, with the exception of a Joe Burrow and maybe a couple of other guys out there, there should be very few positions and players who should not be under the microscope and areas wherein you ask, how can we get better here? What do we need to do to get better here? What can we spend here? It may be a difficult year for the Brown family to spend significant money in free agency because of, you know, ticket sales and all this kind of stuff from this year. And, you know, the salary cap potentially going down next year. There may be some tough decisions to make there, but it's just not good enough. And I know that they are loyal to a lot of people. They are loyal to certain players, loyal to coaches. At some point, you got to start making tough business decisions. And you have to start saying, you know, either you mentioned the offensive line. Is it Jim Turner's fault? If so, you got to make a tough business decision, particularly if you're Zach Taylor, because you have a personal relationship, a familial relationship with Jim Turner. You got to make a tough decision there. If it's Lou Anarumo, you maybe have to make a tough decision there. If it's Geno Atkins, who still has years remaining on his contract, and you feel that salary cap savings that you can get from moving on from Geno Atkins, a Hall of Fame player that has been with you for 10, 11 years, if you feel that you can use that to better capitalize on offensive line players that will help your franchise quarterback, you do it. So my thing is, don't be inactive in free agency. It's kind of an overarching theme. Don't be inactive in free agency because you were active last year. And don't be afraid to reassess certain positions, even if they've shown some improvement in this late season winning streak. Don't crawl into a shell and say, hey, you know what, we're set there. Reassess everything because, you know, what is it, 6 wins, potentially 7 wins in a tie in 2 seasons, that's not good enough. It's just not good enough. So that's, if I was the Bengals, I would really commit to looking very, very hard at a lot of different positions on this roster.
The clock is ticking. They have 4 years left of Joe Burrow's rookie contract. So that's 3 or 4 years left of actual flexibility to build the best roster available. And I think there's pressure that comes with that. And there's also pressure with a guy like Burrow leading the franchise. He has high expectations and high standards for what he thinks is is right for a championship type program. And I think there's certain expectations and pressure that comes with that that we just didn't see in the later years of the Andy Dalton era. And they were able to get away with not being active in free agency because they were able to draft so well during Andy Dalton's early years. And if they haven't had the same, if they happen to have the same success with that in Burrow's early years, then that's great. But I think they realized that like they need to compete right now because it's going to be a lot harder to do so in like 3 or 4 years.
Yep. So good point on that, because you know, this is where you kind of build through free agency with that manageable quarterback contract. That's a very good point. And you simply cannot waste years of Joe Burrow's manageable contract and, you know, early part of his career. He came in kind of a little bit on the older side anyway as a prospect. So you just simply can't waste years. And, you know, you do that when you don't allocate proper resources, don't make the tough business decisions, tough but necessary business decisions on your football team. And even tough decisions, John, could include adding more internal operations staff. There should be very little off the table for discussion based on what has transpired over this last half decade, especially in comparison to the 5 years preceding it, right? I mean, you had a lot of success in those years. Granted, not postseason success, but a lot of good football was played from 2011 through 2015, and the 5 years following it have been pretty dismal.
Yeah, it's putting it lightly.
Let's get on out of here, John. What do you have for us to drop the mic and get on out of here as we crawl towards 21?
Of course, 2020 couldn't end on a more weird note for yours truly. I found out today that I was blocked by the Bengals pro
shop. I saw that.
On weird. Twitter.
I saw and that.
So
what was that about?
I don't know. I've only spent money there. I've never taken any. So I don't know what beef they could possibly have with me. I guess I've just been talking too much trash. But yeah. There was that. I also put out an article on Cincy Jungle about Quinn Spain. I happen to think it's good, and so does Quinn Spain, because he apparently read it and DM'd me about it. Nice. Not the most positive article about Quinn Spain, so you can kind of imagine what the DM was. But if Quinn Spain's checking out, then you guys should check it out too, and along with everything else that we put out on CincyJungle.com.
Did you invite him on the show?
I did not. I don't think he wanted to talk about it.
Oh, okay. All right. A couple of things. Well, that's awesome. And by the way, for those who tune into our YouTube, go ahead.
I'm glad you think it's awesome, because it was kind of awkward for me.
That's actually really funny. I didn't know that took place. For those who watch our YouTube channel, we've started. You've obviously seen the great work from Matt Minnick on the Chalk Talk episodes. You have our podcast episodes, but John's starting to put out some lineman breakdowns, video breakdowns that are also on CincyJungle.com, but we felt they were great additions. So when he gets around to those, we'll be posting those up. They're good stuff. We started that last week, and we'll be probably bringing you more of those throughout the offseason, as well as draft profile breakdowns, etc. So keep your eyes open for that. Also, we're trying to get some different guests on the show as we go through the offseason. We have connected, thanks to our buddy Mike Holbrook, we have connected with former Bengals player Keith Rucker. And he's going to be joining us after the new year on the program, talking about his time with the Bengals and, you know, his thoughts on the current team. So that's kind of cool. We like catching up with former players and getting their perspective on things. And then I want to share this, John. I'm sure this is kind of making the rounds here. This is a tweet from our good buddy, Zim Hude on Twitter. Kind of doing a little rally cry. Can we get everyone to wear their AJ jerseys and gear this Sunday? I think we should have everyone tag AJ all day. If it's his last game, we got to know how much we got to let him know how much joy he gave us. So a little rally cry. If you are watching the Bengals and you got some AJ gear, why not sport it? You know, could very well be his last game with the Bengals, John. And he's given a lot to this team. And I think there's a Hall of Fame argument to be made there. There's also an argument that he needs to do more to make it, but a very, very good player for quite a long time for this team.
Putting you on the spot right now, is it Chad or AJ as the better Bengal of all time?
Oh, my gosh. I think that's always going to be the discussion. I think terms of raw talent and everything, I think you go AJ. And I, the one thing that stuck out to me with AJ, John, and correct me if I'm wrong, I saw more production against Pittsburgh from AJ than I did from Chad. I just remember Chad getting kind of shut out a handful of times from Pittsburgh, but I also remember Chad just eating the Browns and the Ravens alive also. And I think, you know, Chad just brought more fanfare and attention to him based on how he played the game as opposed to AJ, and Chad helped make the Bengals relevant again. So, I mean, there's a good argument for both. I guess I would say AJ by a nose, but you know, it's hard to really commit to that based on him being injured over these past handful of seasons.
I mean, there's a reason why one was drafted in the top five. He was always like the more talented one, but I think he's still going to be underappreciated for just living up to that hype. You know, 7 Pro Bowls in 7 years, people knock the Pro Bowl all they want. That's incredibly rare, and it's something that should be cherished by this fan base and basically by anybody who enjoyed watching AJ Green. So wherever he ends up next, I think we'll all be rooting for him and to finish out his career on a high note, and hopefully maybe he can get into the Hall of Fame as a Bengal one day. But, you know, one more opportunity against the team that he has like 10,000 receiving yards against. So hoping for the best.
Yeah. Well, happy new year to all of our listeners. Safe, healthy, prosperous new year. And of course, my same wishes to you, John. I hope you have a great new year. This has been a great, great year for this program. Despite all the craziness in the world, we've had a lot of different guests. We hope everybody has enjoyed. And I know John and I have enjoyed speaking to them. We've had an immense amount of views, downloads, and attention given to our show and the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. And we can't thank you all enough. And we are expecting to continue to grow and bring you awesome things for 21. But happy new year to all of our listeners. And of course, to you, John. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Have a good New Year's. And